Welcome to the Placebo Magic Podcast, the podcast about imaginative self-care for skeptics. I'm your host, Durmok, the wizard and peasant lord of the vast 10-acre realm of Hobdur, also known as Garrison Benson. Greetings, placebo mages. Today, an announcement about the podcast and a lightning round of mini topics. But first, thank you to our newest Patreon backers, Isaac, Meg, and Marissa. And thank you to our patrons at the producer level or above, Emily, A Sociology of Tarot, Agna Minimus, Annie, Brianne, Dev, Fen, Gyun, John, Marissa, McKinley, Tony, and Valerie. Okay, so before we jump into today's rapid-fire lightning round of mini-topics, I have an announcement, which is a bit of a bittersweet announcement, which is that the Placebo Magic Podcast is coming to a soft ending. So let me explain a little bit about why and what that means. So basically, as far as why, there's a few reasons. One is that I recently started a new job, and so my schedule has just gotten tighter, and I want to liberate some of that free time. And I'm really grateful to all of the Patreon supporters that have helped to extend the amount of time I could go between jobs and make the podcast, you know, somewhat financially rewarding. But it's also kind of been occupying that awkward intermediary space or like limbo between being a hobby and a job, where it's kind of like, you know, not enough money to be a job, but too much obligation to be a hobby. And when I started kind of really dialing in on the Patreon, it was growing at a pace where I thought, okay, maybe it'll get to the point where it is kind of like a job or a side hustle. And then it kind of just eventually plateaued. And that's fine. You know, this is an extremely tiny niche hobby. It's a really, you know, the Venn diagram overlap of people who identify as skeptical materialists and people who want to cast spells is pretty small, understandably so. But yeah, I just, you know, it's like that uncomfortable limbo is now seems like it's sort of not just a temporary state. It's the, you know, where things are just going to stay probably. And I also just feel like I've kind of done what I set out to do with this show. When I started this show, I couldn't find anything about people thinking along these lines of placebo magic, of, you know, practicing magic as an open label placebo. And some of that was just that I didn't know quite exactly what to Google, or I didn't quite know my way around the terminology of, you know, the witchy world and all the different nuances of how people use terms like atheist or skeptic in that particular world. And also the other thing is that in the 5 years since I started this podcast, the number of resources out there have expanded dramatically. You know, most of the best resources I know of, both in the realm of like, you know, kind of small time content creators like myself, and then also the more professional resources from psychologists or science journalists or whatever that touch on the open label placebo kinds of things, that a lot of those best resources I know of came into existence during this past 5 years when I've been making this show. And I feel like I've just kind of am starting to run out of things to say. And it's like I've kind of just have done the thing I wanted to do, which is to thoroughly explore this topic and a lot of different, you know, facets of it. And so basically, I'm going to take this opportunity. I'm coming up on the 5th anniversary of the podcast here, which I believe is like November 14. I'll have to go back and check, but somewhere in the middle of November. And so what I am going to do here is release kind of a few sort of finale episodes in sort of quick succession and end on that 5th anniversary date as kind of a nice poetic ending time. And I'll also be putting some stuff on the bonus show feed as well. But I have a lot of like topics that I kind of wanted to cover, but I didn't feel like I could expand into full episodes. And some of them I even tried to record episodes and I just kept coming up short where it just wasn't enough to be a full topic, or at least I didn't have enough to say about it to be a full topic. And so I'm going to kind of use these finale episodes as a way to empty out my bucket of ideas and take all these things that I couldn't quite make into a full episode and sort of leave it all on the table to bring things to a nice conclusion and have a little bit of like kind of extra content for this last couple of weeks here. Also, when I say that the podcast is coming to a soft ending, what I mean by that is I'm no longer going to be making episodes on any kind of regular schedule, but I may come back and make episodes in the future if I feel like it, when I feel like it. And as far as the Patreon goes, what I'm going to do is the Patreon is still going to be there, but there'll just be one tier after that, you know, November 14 or whatever that date is. There'll just be the $1 tier of getting access to the back catalog of bonus episodes. And so, you know, because the upper tiers, they were kind of perks that are sort of contingent upon me making more episodes. So I'll just have that one tier. And, you know, if you want to go on the Patreon to go back and get access to that back catalog of bonus episodes all at once, you can do that. If you want to, you know, put more money just to support the show retroactively, you can do that. But what I'm going to do is start to release the Patreon bonus episodes on the main feed one at a time, like one per month. So kind of for the most part, the podcast has been on a monthly schedule for the last few years. And so I'm going to keep the main podcast feed rolling by releasing these bonus episodes on the main podcast feed. And that way, my hope with that is that I can keep the discussion community kind of fed, I guess, in terms of like stimulated with new things to talk about. And also that kind of splits the difference in terms of it provides a way for me to kind of slowly phase out the Patreon, where it's there for people. If they want to get access right away, they can do it. But if they don't want to do that, they can just wait and these episodes will come out eventually. There may be a few episodes that I sort of re-edit a little bit because I tend to share more personal details on the Patreon exclusive episodes than I do on the main feed, just for kind of privacy reasons. I feel like the fact that you're giving me money is kind of like a little bit of a filter to filter out people who might be jerks with, you know, sensitive personal information. And so there's a chance that I may come back and take a few little bits out of those things in those episodes in the future, but I'm not, we'll just see. I'm going to take that on a month by month basis. But anyway, so I think that pretty much covers the why and the details of what's going to happen. So, you know, I hope to still stay involved in the Discord community, you know, here and there. And I hope that we can kind of keep that community alive. You know, all good things must come to an end. And I'm a big believer in quitting. I think quitting is incredibly underrated. And, you know, I just feel like I've kind of come to the natural ending point and I want to do what I named myself for, which is my wizard name Dormak means one who makes space or one who makes time. And I think that it's time for me to kind of, you know, take this off my to-do list and make some space for some new things in my life. So anyway, let us move on to the first mini topic for today. So I've touched on this a little bit in the past, but I wanted to kind of tackle it a little more head on, which is this concept of like illusory control. So one of the things that you can achieve by using placebo magic and, you know, imagination is the illusion of control. For instance, a lot of the careers, historical professions and such that we tend to associate most strongly with magic, or that, you know, that have a lot of like magical folklore around them, are careers that have a lot of elements of unpredictability in them. So for instance, you have like medicine, agriculture, sailing and fishing, theater. These are professions where you're incredibly dependent on variables that are outside of your control, such as like the weather, for instance, which is like, you know, a huge thing with agriculture or sailing, or like with fishing or hunting, you have, you know, the unpredictability of wildlife. And with theater, you have the unpredictability of your fellow actors and the audience and the electrical stuff and all that. And so, there's these superstitions that get built around these kinds of pursuits. And I think that one way to look at that sort of more cynically is to say, well, these superstitions don't achieve anything. There is no practical reward or benefit. Like, your brain isn't going to be able to control the weather. So doing like a placebo magic ritual doesn't make sense to try to control the weather because that's just not physically possible, right? Whereas, using a placebo for your own medical situation might be more reasonable in that sense. But I think that there is some benefit to be gained from just the illusion of control, and in particular when it comes to just sort of taming anxiety. And so, like in those examples of like, you're going into a storm on the ocean, in your fishing boat or whatever, there are variables that you can control and there are variables that you can't control. And you really need to be able to keep a level head and focus on the things that are important and things you can control. And using kind of superstitious rituals of, just those little things that you do to try to, quote unquote, control the weather or appease the gods or whatever, those things may not have any influence on the weather, but they do have influence on your own anxiety. And so just having some little rituals that give you the illusion of control may still be beneficial in just kind of like telling that part of your brain, okay, I handled it. Anxieties, a lot of times we tend to feel like we need to do something, but we're ruminating on something that we don't really have a lot of control over. And so if you can just kind of give your that worrying part of your brain something to do, I think that can help to kind of calm it. And so like obviously illusory control, not as valuable as actual control, but it is better than no control a lot of the time. And also, I think it can help to kind of bootstrap you out of feelings of learned helplessness when you have just kind of turned off the sort of goal pursuing behaviors because you think there's nothing you can possibly do to help yourself. I think illusory control can kind of, even though it is fake, it can help you to break out of that mental trap. So let's move on to another mini topic, which is visualization and a particular kind of visualization for people who can't visualize. I kind of mentioned visualization a lot in this show as far as like just, little tricks and ways you can do things. And I think that, there are people out there who just literally cannot visualize. And then there are also a lot of people for whom it's just difficult. There's a kind of a spectrum, from people who are really easily able to visualize things in great detail and people who cannot do it at all and everywhere in between. I'm somewhere in the middle. I tend to be a pretty visual thinker in terms of I visualize concepts as kind of like in three-dimensional space, even pretty abstract concepts, but I can't visualize things in great detail. And I can't like visualize a whole lush scene in color all at once. I just kind of have these little mental flashes of brief images or like kind of, not so I'm not as super sophisticated, but anyway, what I want to get at here is just that, you're going to encounter that recommendation all over the place to visualize this and that when you're exploring, the witchy world of spiritual practices. And that can definitely feel like a roadblock if you're someone who struggles with visualization, but I think that it's pretty easy to adapt those exercises by adding just some extra support. So, for instance, you can add some visual aids, add some props, add some gesturing, or even just add some verbalization. So, for instance, if a magical exercise is telling you to visualize a bright light, maybe instead of visualizing it, you could try to just walk yourself through it out loud and say, "I see a bright light." Like say that to yourself and add pantomiming and things like that. I think that could be a really effective way to get around some of the difficulties of for people who can't visualize or people who just struggle to visualize. And you can use these two things in tandem. You can try your best to visualize while also adding these kinds of little props and things. And I think visualization is, for most people, it's a skill that you can get better at. It's like a muscle that you can build. A lot of it, I think, is it helps a lot just to be able to get better at controlling your attention. That helps quite a bit. And you can do that, through meditation of pretty much any flavor of meditation can help you to get better at focusing your attention. But also just visualization specifically, I think with repeated practice, it seems like you can get a bit better at that. I don't think it's going to be able to change your situation if you have aphantasia, as far as I'm aware. But for most people, I think it can make a meaningful difference to just practice it. And really, it's just not something to worry about or judge yourself about, regardless of how good or bad you are at visualization. The purpose of these practices is not to be super skilled at something. The purpose of the practices is to help you to achieve your goals and your values. And so it just makes sense. Give yourself whatever accommodations that you need. Don't worry about whether you're good or bad at this. Okay, another mini topic I want to tackle here, something I've been meaning to tackle on the show for quite a while, is the question of like how whimsical you should get in your magic and your spiritual practice. And something that I certainly tend to like, including a lot of sort of whimsy. And I definitely, in the way I present this stuff on the show, some of that is just for my own sort of, I guess, ethical, like, I want to be sure that I'm not misleading anybody into thinking that this show is like a super scholarly approach. And so everything from the intro to the show and the outro music and all of that, like, I've crafted to be like, have this whimsical flavor so that nobody's getting confused and thinking this is like an NPR show or something. But also I for me personally, I have found whimsy in my own practice to be really, really helpful, because I tend to fall into the trap of being too serious, and it really can be like kind of toxic internal behavior for myself. And so the whimsy really helps me to just diffuse that and not take myself too seriously and not take these kinds of practices too seriously. It's really like a balm for the soul. But I think that there is kind of a distinction that you need to make between whimsy and like snark. And, you know, a lot of people like to self-deprecate in a way that's kind of mean-spirited, and you're kind of tearing yourself down. And so I would say if you tend to use like kind of sarcasm and other sort of mean-spirited joking with yourself and with your own, you know, struggles and internal challenges, then it might be advantageous to steer away from whimsy and try to be a little more serious in your practice and just focus on earnestness. Whereas if you're someone like me who tends to struggle with taking yourself too seriously, then whimsy is something that can be a really great, like, kind of safety net and a source of perspective, and kind of ultimately diffusing a lot of internal tension. All right, another mini topic here. I want to talk a little bit about how you can talk to others about placebo magic, which is something that I've got to be honest, I generally avoid in my day-to-day life. It's just because most of the times that it comes up, it's just a complicated conversation. It's complicated to even explain what the heck you're talking about. But I have gotten a little better at it over time, and especially just through the process of like finding better terminology and better metaphors and such. And the way I typically go about it nowadays is to start by explaining the concept of a leaf. So I did an episode about this. I can't remember if it was on the main show or the bonus show now, but this term A-leaf, it was coined by a philosopher named Tamar Gendler, and it is basically, you know, it's based off of the word B-leaf. It's like a twist on that, on the word. So you have A-leaf and B-leaf, like the letters A and B. Okay, so A-leaf is something that you don't believe, but that you still kind of react as if you believe on sort of a like a more base psychological level. So great examples of this might be, okay, you're feeling anxious while you're flying you're riding in an airplane. You might know in your actual beliefs that flying on airline travel is really quite safe and quite a bit safer than driving, but your body is still reacting as if you believed that it was dangerous. Even better example is if you're watching like a scary movie and you don't believe that the slasher villain is real, but your body is still reacting as if it's a real threat. And it's not just for things like fear and anxiety. It's also for all kinds of different responses. So I think explaining that concept, it's relatively easy to grasp. Everybody in pretty much engages with fiction on some level, and so everybody kind of has a not only it's easy for them to understand what Aleph is, but everybody pretty much that you know is already intentionally seeking out situations where they're making use of Aleph, at least to have fun and relax in the form of watching TV or reading books or whatever. So that kind of creates a little bit of common ground to understand, like all of us are using our imagination for like kind of therapeutic purposes already. So we got that as common ground. And then you can kind of go in and explain, you can explain from there about the open label placebo effect, the idea that a placebo still works when you know that you're taking a placebo. And then from there, it's, I think it's pretty simple to connect those two concepts and say, okay, so I like to use magic and spells and rituals, not because I believe them, but because I aleave them and I am using my aleave to try to tap into, therapeutic benefits. And for me personally, the easiest way to sort of broach the topic of spells and rituals and tarot and stuff is to use this layer of whimsy on it and just to say, oh, so I pretend to be a wizard. I dress up like a wizard or, explain it in that way and explain it in a way that I'm not taking myself overly seriously. I think that people have a pretty clear idea of what you mean when you say I'm a witch, but people don't really have any clear idea of what you mean when you say I'm a wizard or I'm a mage or I'm a placebo mage or whatever. And so I tend to veer toward that using the word wizard for that reason, because it's like you're starting from more of a blank slate and someone will say, oh, what is that? Whereas if you say I'm a witch, then you're kind of automatically slotted into a certain category in their mind before you may have had the chance to explain what you actually are talking about. Yeah, I hope that helps if you do find yourself in that situation. Of course, the approach that you're going to take is going to vary wildly, I think, depending on whether a person is a believer in the supernatural or not. I think the approach that I just gave is more suitable to explaining this to atheists and skeptics. If you're taking it from the standpoint of explaining it to like someone who's an occultist, then you might want to take a little different tack. I try to avoid putting myself in a situation where I feel like I have to sort of debunk somebody else's very meaningful experiences. I think that's just not, it's not my job. And I think that when it comes to talking to people who are true believers and talking to them about my own practice, I try to approach it from the standpoint of common ground and like talking about, well, I don't believe in the supernatural, but I do find these experiences deeply meaningful. And I can see that yours are really meaningful to you, kind of going at it from that angle. And even looking at this as like, if I was looking at it as, oh, it is my job to convince them to renounce their supernatural beliefs or whatever, to proselytize skepticism, taking the big picture view, I think that one way to do that is to kick someone's support system out from under them. And another way to do that is to build a bridge that they can cross. And I think if somebody has a deep history of making meaning through these kind of supernatural experiences that they think that they've had, showing that you can have really deep meaning with these kinds of experiences, even when you don't believe that they're supernatural in nature, I think that that's kind of builds a bridge that somebody, if they want to, can cross and realize like, oh, I don't have to actually believe this stuff. I can still engage with all of this meaning, and I don't have to kind of cut the thread of my life story and start over. I can bring all of my own favorite myths and metaphors and tools with me into the world of, being a more skeptical, critical thinker. Okay, and one more mini topic I want to tackle today is this idea that I had, which I call imaginary feedback. And so what I mean by this is it kind of came from, this was inspired by playing games, and in particular like exercise games, where when I'm playing, for instance, like Ring Fit Adventure, I think there's multiple things working in that game that make it so much more motivating than just doing those exercises without the game. And so part of that is the fiction of the game. There's a story that you're playing through, and there's bad guys that you're fighting, and all of that is very, I think, very closely adjacent to placebo magic in that you're, harnessing the power of imagination and whatnot. But there's also a much more simple explanation of why it's so motivating, and it's just the immediate feedback that you get. So like every single rep that you do in an exercise, it's giving you this feedback of like, great job, that kind of thing. And with that game in particular, you have a lot of really nice haptic feedback coming from the controller. You have sound, you have visuals, and it's all very polished, and it's something that like real life can not compete with, generally speaking. Usually when you like, let's say it would be so nice if when I was washing dishes, if every time I washed a dish for each dish, it would be like, great job, 100%, perfect, and had like the dish sparkled and there was like a cool force feedback. I don't know. You get what I'm saying. It's like you don't get those kinds of things in real life. And so one idea that I've had is that you could just kind of add some through the power of visualization. You could just sort of visualize these little video game-esque feedback moments coming after you accomplish little goals, like you're folding laundry, and just imagine after every piece of laundry you fold, imagine like a little pop-up on your vision that says, perfect, or nice job, or And obviously this is just not practical to do very often, but I think it's something that is fun to try every once in a while, and it it does seem to me like it almost gives you a little bit of insight into our own brains and like the this like slot machine like nature of gamification, that why those things work so well and why chores in games tend to be fun whereas chores in real life tend to be boring. It's something that, yeah, like it can be a little bit of a boost every once in a while to try this, and it also just is like an experiment that will give you some interesting insights into your own brain. So another mini topic I want to tackle today is this balance of variety in your practice versus consistency. And I think there's benefits to both. And so that's why I say that it's a balance, is because there's a huge benefit that you can get from keeping a practice consistent over time, especially if it's the kind of practice that you can plug into like habit cues and just to kind of understand the science of habit formation. It can be massively beneficial to just have these kinds of things as a safety net, to have something that you don't have to put an incredible amount of effort into. I talked about this a little bit on the bonus episode last month, or whenever that the last one was, of my own practice over the years of doing mindfulness meditation with my morning coffee. And this is something that like I'm kind of hijacking the fact that I'm mildly addicted to caffeine, and that the first thing I'm thinking about when I wake up is coffee. Coffee has obviously a very like distinct and strong scent and flavor. And so by using the reward for that habit of making coffee first thing in the morning as the cue for this other habit of practicing mindfulness meditation, I've kind of taken a very reliable habit and chained it together with a habit that I want to have and maintain, which is mindfulness meditation. And it's a pretty effective tool for that. And I think the more consistent I have been with it, the more rewarding it's been. So on the other hand, though, I think there is a huge benefit that you can get by changing things up a lot and trying new practices all the time and not sticking with things, because the more things you stick with, the less time you have to try new things. And so I've certainly gained a lot, I think, from just trying out different practices, even just once. Partly it's a way to just break yourself out of a little bit of a rut mentally, spiritually. And it's also, they tend to provide you like fresh insights that you may not normally get. I know I've done a lot of dabbling with like, I guess you could almost say like a non-chemical psychonaut kind of a thing, where like trying to explore the brain and explore consciousness, but not in the usual sense of using psychedelics and stuff, but just little experiments. Like I've like I have done the, you know, the Ganzfeld technique where you put, you cut ping pong balls in half, put the halves over your eyes, lay down, and maybe put some white noise on and some headphones, or better yet, noise canceling headphones, and just lay there. And then within a few minutes, you begin to hallucinate pretty much reliably. And it's one of these things that it's not that useful as a spiritual practice. I could certainly see it being used as a form of meditation and maybe even a form of divination if you are having hallucinations that are like the ones I was having were mostly just kind of abstract patterns and waves and things. But I did see some flashes of imagery in there, and you could certainly interpret those kinds of images as divinatory insight or divinatory symbols, you know, like similar to what you the pictures on a tarot card. But really, though, I think the most value I got out of doing that a few times was just a firsthand experience of the unreliability of my brain, and the fact that I could just, without any kind of drugs or any kind of like thing like that, just induce hallucination within moments with just a ping pong ball from the dollar store or whatever. It really goes to show that your senses are just not what you think they are. They're not what we intuit them to be. And so there's a lot of those kinds of experiments that, yeah, you do them a few times, you can really gain a ton of insight, even if you don't stick with it. And not just for these kind of psychonaut sort of exercises, but for self-care practices too, like keeping a gratitude journal, even if you don't keep it for the rest of your life, keeping a gratitude journal for a week or two might give you a lot of insight and might create some sort of automatic behaviors that you don't need to write into your schedule and carve out time for, but just kind of rewiring the way that you react to the world on a moment by moment basis. And so I would say, you know, you want to have a few really, really consistent practices and tools and symbols that you, things that you keep sacred for their self-care purposes, things that basically they are serving as like your safety blanket, and they're kind of designed to minimize how far you can fall, and you know, things that they'll pick you back up when you're having a bad day. And so in particular, you know, like willpower, we know, is not unlimited. And so by using consistency, you can minimize the need for willpower. And so these are why you want to focus on practices for your worst days, keeping those consistent, because your worst days are the days when you're not going to have the energy to talk yourself into doing some kind of really fancy new thing or really effortful thing. And then when you do have your good days and you're full of insight and a desire to explore, that's when you can try out weird new practices and try things you've never tried before and get the benefit of variety. You can find the Placebo Magic Podcast and my poetry on the web at garrisonbenson.com. Leave a voicemail for the show by calling 989-318-4118. Music is by Kevin MacLeod of incompetech.com and licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 license. You can support the show by giving us a review on your podcast app of choice, sharing an episode with a friend, or becoming a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/placebomagic. Patreon supporters also gain access to our Patreon-exclusive bonus show. Remember, magic is a metaphor, and metaphor is magical.